Inside Red Bull Bora Hans Grohe, the OFIB online podcast on the Tour de France. For 3 weeks, we accompany team manager Ralf Denk and the biggest and most successful German cycling team through the Tour de France. Do you have questions for Ralf Denk? Send them to tobias.ruf@betmedia.de. And now, enjoy the new episode.
Up or down? Those were the only options on the 14th stage of the Tour de France. Four climbs, three of them first category, rain showers and narrow roads. At times, several groups formed, fighting for the stage win.
In the main field, however, UAE set such a high pace that the top stars took over on the final climb. In the end, Tadej Pogacar wins once again. Florian Lipovic and Remco Evenepoel fight their way to the finish, but lose 10 seconds to one or two podium contenders. I will discuss just how intense it really was today with our man on the ground, and with that, I say hello, as always, to team manager Ralf Denk.
Hello, good evening, and greetings from France.
Ralf, that was a tough stage today by the looks of it. If I look at the result quite neutrally and I didn't see the stage, then I read that Pogacar wins 38 seconds ahead of Del Toro and Sepp Kuss, with Lipovic and Remco Evenepoel following 48 and 50 seconds behind, respectively. Do I just read from the raw numbers that things didn't go optimally for you today, or am I reading that wrong?
No, well, I had to disagree there. Both Remco and Florian rode a great race, and I stand by my opinion that when we talk about the podium, we're ultimately talking about minutes, and here today we're still talking about seconds.
And if you take a look at the general classification, then there is currently only a 1 minute and 20 second gap between second and seventh place.
The time trial is still to come. The Alps are still to come.
And we will then be talking about minutes, not seconds. And both our guys are in the game. They put up a great fight today and we are fully on track. And there is no bad mood in the team right now. Instead, we are focusing on what is still to come and we remain optimistic.
Okay, let's dive right into where it got really tough on the final climb towards the finish. Pogacar held back a bit at first, or so it seemed. Decathlon was pushing the pace at the front, and then came an attack from Florian Lipovic. That looked very brave at first. Was that something you had planned in advance, or was it a spontaneous decision on his part?
No, we told both of them, if you feel good, try something on the final climb. And Florian tried something. So chapeau, because the base pace was incredibly high, but he still went for it and was able to open up a gap. Sechas was then able to follow. Then Vingegaard came. Then it all came back together. But first, you need the courage to attack here at this immensely high pace. Maybe he paid a price for that attack at the top of the climb. But if you don't try anything, you won't make a difference. And he ended up losing a few seconds at the finish. Remco also helped him out a bit. Remco was very, very strong on the last 5 kilometers, the ones that were rather flat. And they, Florian and Remco, were in the same group, worked well together. So Remco did a lot of the leading work there. And therefore, it is not the end of the world for us, even though we lost a few seconds. But we view the stage positively and we must stay focused on what is still to come.
Yes, I felt that Florian Lipovic's attack was the starting signal for the others to do something. After that, Vingegaard took over at the front. That was also the phase where Remco Evenepoel started having a few problems. Let's look at that again. That was another steep section where he had a bit of a struggle. He actually comes back. We've seen that before too. He makes it back and then finishes really strongly on the flat section at the top. Is that something you really look at and say, okay, what do we do with him when it gets really steep? Or how did you see that?
Yes, well, first of all, we have to say that two people actually said goodbye to the podium today. That is Matthias Skjelmose and Tom Pidcock, who we also talked about yesterday. They are actually, if now, they are over 2 minutes back now in terms of the podium. They have actually rather said goodbye there. That means the circle of podium contenders has become smaller. And the fact that Remco lets them go a bit, that also shows how clever he is, or how well he can assess his own body. And he does not fully explode. He just eases off a bit, then rides his own pace. And as soon as it gets a bit flatter, he can use his time trial skills and can often close gaps again. We saw that too when he finished third here at the Tour de France 2 years ago in a similar way. He was never quite with the best on the climbs, but he always came back, and that is just his riding style. And that is perfectly fine for us. And it also did Florian. Good that Remco came up from behind again, and then they were able to work together nicely for the last 5 kilometers.
That means in the general classification, as you just said, it remains super tight. That also means, as you already hinted, you will keep calm and carry on as before, I assume, and not somehow panic and think, okay, how do we manage to act differently, to catch up differently?
No, look here, before the stage, Matthias Skjelmose, Tom Pidcock, and also Lenny Martinez were within striking distance for the podium. But in my opinion, they have said goodbye as contenders today. The group of riders competing for the podium has become smaller, but there are still 6 riders left.
That is Jonas Vingegaard, that is Remco Evenepoel, Paul Sekas, Juan Ayuso, Florian Lipowitz, and Isaac Del Toro. Those are the candidates who, in my opinion, will decide the podium among themselves. And the Tour de France still has over a week to go, and we will be talking about minutes for those mentioned at some point.
And perhaps that will happen as early as tomorrow, which we can maybe cover again in the preview. What I would also be interested in, it was obvious today that the name Lipo was shouted by the fans very often. He also said in the interview that he is grateful for this great support. That you also noticed today that many German fans took the opportunity to help the tour move in the right direction.
Well, first of all, you have to compliment the organizers for designing the route so that yesterday's and today's stages met up again. It was all in the general area around the Ballon d'Alsace. That is the main mountain in the region, and you can ride up it from the left, from the right, from the back, and from the front. And we drove into the region yesterday and today as well. That means it was relatively easy for the spectators with their motorhomes or in the guest houses where they are staying, or perhaps from a bit further away to enjoy the 2 days. And that is also what I keep bringing up, is we need to centralize this so it is easier for the fan to be there on site, and perhaps not just for 1 day, but for 2 days. And these 2 days now, they harmonized perfectly in terms of the route because the distances were short. And that's why there were significantly more spectators than if we just drove over one mountain and then drove to the next and then to the next. Instead, if you positioned yourself well and add yesterday and today together, then you might have seen the racers 3, 4, 5 times. And that is actually the interesting part. And that is why there were many, many more spectators today than usual on the stages, which was, of course, nice. Right at the German border. And indeed, there were many German flags and many Lipowitz signs on the road and so on. That naturally gives Florian an enormous amount of strength. And he is quite the German fanboy there, which I really am happy for him.
Definitely, that can only help. Ralf, I would like to take a look today at the most prominent new signing you made just under a year ago. It is about Remco Evenepoel as a background topic. Briefly to start, for those not quite familiar with his history, a few facts. He was a very good soccer player in his youth, came to cycling relatively late at around 17 years of age, but then made a huge impact. As a Belgian, he was naturally branded a prodigy, the successor to Eddy Merckx and so on. The hopes were huge and he had success after success in the under 23 category in his first few years. He did not even need those because he signed with the professional racing team Detsuninck Quickstep at 19 years old. Then in 2020, a minor setback for him, a severe crash at the Tour of Lombardy, a fractured pelvis, and with that, a long break. But he fought his way back a year later, and then came the triumphant rides that many remember, especially in the time trials. World champion, double Olympic gold medalist, an absolute superstar even before he joined you. My question to you, how did you first perceive him when he entered the scene and what was your first impression of him?
The first impression, that wasn't directly from me. That was back then our youth director Christian Schrott, and he once called me from an under 19 race back then and said, hey, there is a Belgian who rides every stage alone out in front, and then he has a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, then you never see him again, and then he wins. He won everything there was to win on that tour, and always with a lead of several minutes. I said, yeah. I didn't take it that seriously, to be honest. And I saw Remco for the first time in 2018 at the Cycling World Championships in Innsbruck, and he won the junior race there, even though he was several minutes behind the pack at first because he was involved in a crash. And then he closed the gap of several minutes all by himself, rode through the field, pulled away at the front, and became junior world champion. That was when I started taking his name seriously, and I was really impressed by how he won his races. And he turned professional relatively quickly, skipped the under 23 class. And yes, as you said, he also quickly became road world champion, time trial world champion, double Olympic champion, won the Vuelta, but also won classic one day races like in San Sebastian. And for me, it was clear that he is an exceptional talent. He does not come from cycling. He also did not spend his youth in cycling.
He didn't start racing in the under 11 or under 13 categories, but only from the under 19 level. And perhaps we can make even more of him than he was already capable of. And that is to some extent our calculation to definitely achieve equally significant victories with him. Maybe we can also make him a bit better on the longer climbs, and that is our idea. But I knew that I was not the only one trying to sign him. Yeah, the entire World Tour, meaning there are 18 teams in the World Tour, they all wanted to sign him, and he was at the time and still is an exceptional talent and a personality in cycling. I call that an icon rider, an iconic rider, because he also, let's say, attracts the media and is polarizing.
That definitely. What was your impression like during the conversations with him then? Of course, he probably spoke with more than one team. But when he was sitting there with you, and now you have gotten to know him for a while, what kind of guy is he? Because on the outside, you already said it, he is a dazzling personality. The whole world is watching him. How do you experience him in a training camp, or even when he sits in front of you and you have a conversation?
Yes, well, as with most big sports stars here, you know, Remco takes his profession very, very, very seriously, and he actually leaves nothing to chance when it comes to training, recovery, nutrition, and everything else surrounding it.
Sure, he has massive talent, but he is also a massively hard worker. And only when those two combinations meet, then I believe the really big victories come. So talent alone and a mediocre worker, that is no longer enough in top level sports today. And I think I can even speak across all sports. So you have to combine both, and you can see that now too.
I am no football expert, but when I look at someone like Haaland or Ronaldo, they are huge, huge talents, but also huge, huge workers. And that is how I would describe Remco as well.
What has he already brought to you this year? Do you notice a different level of attention, especially from international media? I imagine the Germans are focused on Florian Lipowitz, but he is definitely a brand we have already listed all his successes. Do you notice that there is a different kind of focus on you as a team, or has not much changed in that regard?
No, we are naturally more in the spotlight, and we notice that too when we are at the races before the start. Our bus, when Remco is racing, is always besieged. It reminds me of the times when Peter Sagan rode for us. That was a very iconic rider for me too, and of course I thought about it. Does it make sense to sign Remco or not? And I also took a look at the history from when Peter Sagan was with us. 2019 was a very, very successful year for us. We won 47 races in the year 2019. We took second place in the world rankings, and Peter Sagan was in the prime of his career. But Peter Sagan only secured 4 big victories for us that year. Big victories, important victories. But in his slipstream, other guys like Max Schachmann, Emmanuel Buchmann, Pascal Ackermann and Sam Bennett also secured the rest of our victories. So those guys brought in over 40 wins, and that naturally helps young people. The ones mentioned were all very young in 2019. When you have a figurehead like that at the front, who takes the pressure off the whole team? Because when the media is there, they want to talk to Remco first. In 2019, the media only wanted to talk to Sagan. That means it was a huge relief for them, especially for the young riders, so they could really focus on their sport. And then they started winning bike races. And from that perspective, such an iconic rider for a team is always mega valuable. It is, of course, not easy because there are only a handful. But if you have one, then it helps the whole team.
What is not quite so easy, I imagine the other side of the coin is that there is so much focus on him and he naturally speaks a lot with the media. That it gives the impression that he also, lets a lot of emotions run free. He likes to argue on the field. He also says publicly when something doesn't suit him. How do you deal with something like that? Or is it just part of the deal you accept with a driver like that, with such an iconic driver, as you call him?
I believe that exactly these types are in demand in the sports world, because nobody wants a slippery character. Well, that has changed massively anyway. Since we have had social media, it is much, much more sensitive regarding what the racers are allowed to say and what they are not. That also applies to the entire sport. And if someone says something different, it gets shared and commented on. That didn't exist back then. So on one hand, it's harder for drivers to find the right balance and say the right thing. But I always think you have to say something to stay relevant. If you always just say, yes, the race was tough and it wasn't quite enough and the others were better and tomorrow we'll try again. If you always give interviews like that without substance or without real substance, then I don't think that's satisfying for the fans. But if someone really also makes a polarizing statement or two, then it is certainly, I think, for the identity of the athlete, the team, better than if you just always give such slick answers.
Yes, polarized, definitely. Very, very exciting, this new signing you have brought in. Yes, we are, of course, looking ahead to tomorrow. It is another very tough stage, including a summit finish at the Plateau de Glières. Yes, what do you expect from tomorrow after such a hard fight today? That could be really draining again, right?
Yes, tomorrow is a mega difficult finish. We know the finish from the Criterium du Dauphin.
It has finished up there before, and the approach is perhaps not quite as difficult as today.
That means it is not quite as much of an up and down ride throughout the day. I think that tomorrow there will definitely be a larger breakaway group, but I believe the final climb is too steep and we are back before the rest day tomorrow. That means everyone will give it their all again tomorrow and there will be a tough battle for the podium on the final climb. So I believe the group of favorites will decide the win among themselves just like today. And Pogacar will once again be the man to beat. And I don't think that a breakaway will succeed tomorrow. And for us, it's about getting Florian and Remco into the best possible positions when the climb begins and the final ascent starts. And then as far as the legs will carry us, yeah. And we talked about it before. There are six people currently fighting for two spots on the podium, and that will be a tough battle. And we are currently talking about seconds, and maybe one or the other of the six mentioned will be hit by minutes of distance as early as tomorrow. I hope not our guys. And it is definitely another very, very difficult stage tomorrow before the rest day.
If you guys are feeling good again, are attacks like the one we saw from Lipowitz today conceivable again?
Yes, of course. In my opinion, attack is often the best defense, and just waiting around does not make any sense now. Florian is currently in sixth place, so not on the podium. It is not far to the podium, but he has to make up seconds, and I hope he feels good, and then he can try something.
Wonderful. We will watch it again and of course talk about it afterwards. For now, have a safe trip. I believe it is not a short transfer today, and then we will talk again tomorrow.
No, it is a two-hour transfer today.
That is a long way. Travel safely and see you tomorrow.
My pleasure. And have a good evening in Rosenheim.
That was the latest edition of Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OVB Online on the Tour de France. You can find the podcast on all common podcatchers and on the websites of OVB Media and Ippen Media. Thanks for listening and see you in the next episode.